What I'd like to do is just sort of finish up with your time at Cornell. I know that you mentioned that you got your master's and you got your PhD. You were working with Bill Miller for your master's. I'm not sure if you were working with him for your PhD as well. Yes.
He was the only one left.
He
They
was the only
all
one
gone.
at the department. I am curious to know how it is nowadays when you are finishing up your undergraduate degree. You have to apply to other universities for master's and PhD. Did you have to do any of that?
No, they sort of encouraged it, but especially after your bachelor's, you should go somewhere else for your graduate work. But I was looking in other universities for a teaching assistantship, which is what goes with graduate work. At least at that time it did. And I couldn't find one. So you might say I was stuck at Cornell. So I said, all right, I'll stay at Cornell and pay my way. And I paid my way for one semester, and then Bill Miller found me a teaching assistantship. And so thereon, I became a teaching assistant for the rest of my 2 years or so.
Why is it that you wanted to get advanced degrees in chemistry? I mean, I know there are a number of
My
people.
father told me to get the top degree that you can so you can make that shoe polish. No, I mean, certainly the idea was in my mind that to be competitive, you want to learn as much as you could.
So it was pretty clear from you, for you from the beginning that you would stay for a graduate degree.
Probably.
You said that you did look for teaching
And
assistant.
those days, graduate school tuition was cheaper than undergraduate school. And of course, if you got a teaching assistantship, you had no fees, no tuition, no nothing. It was all, and you got a little pay. I got $50 a month for being a teaching assistant.
You mentioned that you were looking for teaching assistantships and, elsewhere.
Yeah.
Were there specific universities that you were looking
Yes,
to get?
Penn State was one. I had some friends there. I didn't get one, and I can't remember if any others. I'm sure I tried a few.
Okay. You also mentioned that during your graduate career, the organic, I think you said the organic chemist saw you as a physical chemist, and the physical
Physical
chemist
chemist.
saw you as an organic chemist.
That was more after
That was
in
more
graduate
after.
school.
So after the you told us a bit about that first
Now,
project.
Bill Miller was a special kind of organic chemist because he was very much interested in mechanics. He was a mechanic. You see, physical organic chemist as such, which became a very important subfield of chemistry, was just beginning to get on its way. When I got to Bureau Standards 7 or 8 years later, I taught a course in physical organic chemistry because staff members were encouraged, people with doctors were encouraged to give courses for the others. And to find the kind of To find a textbook for a course of physical organic chemistry in 1951 or 52 was not easy. I finally settled on one on a textbook by Michael Dewar, whom I didn't know at the time. Later on, we became good friends. But Michael Dewar was sort of, he was an outcast in British chemistry, because he questioned some of the big name in British physical organic chemistry was Ingold, Hughes and Ingold at the University College. And Dewar questioned Ingold's ideas, some of Ingold's ideas, and that put him out in the doghouse. literally. And then so Dewar, when he was due for a professorship, they gave him one on the east side of London, which is about the worst place in any way you want to see London, is that. And then later on, Dewar was a brilliant man. And the Welsh Foundation, when they established the professorship, the first one in the US, Michael Dewar was their choice. They dragged him, brought him over from England, and made him the first Welsh professor at Austin. And as I say, Michael and I became good friends for a long time.
So, you mentioned that Bill Miller gave you this research project. It didn't, that first one didn't really work out, so he assigned you something else. Can you tell me a little bit about, do you remember what project you were working on? No?
Yes. No, that may be my doctoral project.
Okay. Well, what I was going to ask you in part was, did you get to choose what you wanted to do for your doctorate, or was it something that was assigned to you as well?
I didn't know enough.
Okay.
What Bill Miller was interested in was, Bill Miller was a fluorine chemist, and there are very few fluorine chemists in the 1940s. And in fact, that's why after a while Bill Miller took off, worked on the Manhattan Project in New York, and he took his whole damn research group with him, except me.
Why was that?
I was an enemy alien. So he left me in Ithaca. He left one other guy in Ithaca because that fellow was almost finished. And the rest of the group went to New York with him. And what we were working on at the time was the whole idea of the acidity of negatively substituted amides. In organic analysis, it was well established that if you had sulfonamides, and if there was still a hydrogen on a sulfonamide, that hydrogen would be acidic because of the SO2 group, the inductive effect of the SO2 group, and could be removed by base. But Bill Miller wanted to have something similar, or look for something similar, with trifluoroacetamide, because acetic group would also be electronegative. And again, if there's a hydrogen there, you could use it. Well, something like that in my PhD. I think that was a PhD thesis.
Mm-hmm. So, you mentioned that Bill Miller was pretty much the only chemist left at Cornell because of the war work.
And then he took
off. And then he leaves. And so my vision now is you and one other person who's finishing up sitting in a lab doing your dissertation, your doctoral thesis, completely on your own. Is that?
Pretty much. Now wait a minute. Mm-hmm. There was one very important addition then. How important only turned out later on. Well, the only faculty around then was the very old, that they didn't really want for the war work, and the very young, who haven't really established themselves. Among the very young, I'm giving you now history of Cornell during the war. In the meantime, Cornell also acquired Peter Debye as department chairman, which was a big surprise to everybody, but I don't want to get into that. I was not involved with Debye at all.
Well, why was that a big surprise to everybody? What? Why was that a big surprise to everybody?
Peter Debye had gotten a Nobel Prize in 35, I don't know which year. And he was an institute director of the Kaiser Wilhelm Society, which was like the national academies in Russia. They had their own institute, and if you were an institute director of the Kaiser Wilhelm Society, the sky was the limit, and if you wanted your office plated in gold, you get your office plated in gold. So Peter Debye, like every other institute director, had everything he wanted. In 39, now Cornell has always had, may still have, a famous, well-established visiting professor. And it is called the George Fisher Baker Visiting Lecturer. This is a very, very senior professor from Timbuktu or wherever, who comes to Cornell for a semester or a year. They pay him whatever they pay him, and he interacts with the faculty, and the faculty benefits, the students benefit, everybody. Anyhow, Debye signed up for the Baker Lectureship for 39. And here is 39, and Debye is there. It's 1 year or one semester, I'm not sure. And then you go back home to the gold-plated institute. But war breaks out. And all of a sudden, and I was just a beginning graduate student, not even that, all of a sudden the word gets around that Debye wants to stay. But he doesn't want to stay just to be a professor. In Germany, professors come in grades. So he wants to stay, but he wants to be chairman of the department. Well, there was a chairman, but I can't get rid of him. So Debye is announced as the chairman for 1940 of the chemistry department, and he remained chairman for God knows how long. And the present chairman was stepped down a notch, and Debye just stayed at Cornell until he died. And then about 15 years after all this, there was a controversy. Was Debye a Nazi? And the guy who started the controversy was Roald Hoffman, who's Jewish, as a Nobel laureate. And whatnot. And he wasn't there at Cornell at the time. The only Jewish faculty member at Cornell at the time was a fellow named Simon Bauer, whom I knew very well. He was my boss in my teaching career. I mean, I was the teaching assistant. And Bauer is a great guy, and a great scientist, and a fine fellow. And the other thing that when this controversy came up, the controversy came up because the entrance hall to Baker Laboratory was christened for Debye. This was the Debye reception hall or whatever it is. And Roald Hoffman said, we got to change that, that Debye was a Nazi. And there was quite a bit of controversy about this. And I took, as an alumnus, I took a, and I know Roald Hoffman, I said, I don't believe this. In the first place, if Debye was a Nazi, why in hell did he stay at Cornell instead of fighting in the, I mean, being present in the Great War of Liberation of the Germans and whatnot. And my main evidence that says Debye couldn't have been a Nazi is that one of Debye's first graduate students was a fellow named Ulrich Strauss, my age, who was a German refugee Jew. Arrived at Cornell, looked for a professor to work for, and picked Debye. And worked for Debye for 5-6 years, and then he became a faculty member at Rutgers. And I told Roald Hoffman, I said, you ought to talk to Ulrich Strauss. I mean, he wouldn't have put, if there had been the slightest indication that he was a Nazi, Strauss, by the time the war was over, he had 10 others he could have worked for. Even at the beginning, there was a top-notch physical chemist, John Kirkwood at Cornell, who later on moved to Caltech. But I don't believe that Ulrich Strauss would have worked for Debye if Debye had the slightest tinge of being a Nazi. It's just incompatible. I mean, it's like water and oil, they just don't mix.
So how was that issue resolved at Cornell?
I don't know. I'm sort of curious to know if that entrance hall is now named Debye or is it not named Debye. I don't know.
I went to Cornell and I actually don't know the answer. I've been in Baker Labs a number of times, but I never paid attention to whether or not it was named at the entrance hall.
No, I mean, at some stage when you were there, it may say Debye, and if you came back, you probably wouldn't pay any attention.
No.
For that entrance hall that's got a name. And if the name is Debye, it wouldn't be a big surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And if the name is not Debye, it would also not be a big surprise. But this was a big stink. It was written up in Chemical Engineering News.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been about 10 years ago. And I couldn't... By then, Ulrich Strauss may have been dead. I don't know. I mean, he was my age. Mm-hmm. So 10 years ago, you've been 80, and 80 is a respectable age to be dying, so... But anyhow, Debye stayed on, and stayed on at Cornell. They also found a teaching job in physics for his son. It was all part of the package deal. Mm-hmm. This was a big thing for Cornell to have Debye at Cornell.
Mm-hmm. So we had been talking about you doing your PhD thesis. You had mentioned that Miller had left to work on the
project. I was going to tell you there were two new arrivals. Mm-hmm. Yes. This was now 1944, the last year of the war, sort of 44, 45. Okay. The two new arrivals were a couple of inorganic chemists, both men, of course, and a young man from Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
One, I'm sure you've heard of, Henry Talby.
Mm-hmm.
Who got a Nobel Prize, I don't know, 30 years later. And the other one was a fellow named Tor Rubin. You probably never heard of him.
No.
Well, he and I roomed together. We had an apartment together. And both Rubin and Talby came all indoctrinated with the new ideas of inorganic chemistry. How inorganic chemistry is no longer just a field of qualitative what we know about how this atom will act this way, this ion will act that way, whatnot, just all in a very qualitative way. But a couple of top people in California put things on a quantitative basis. The oxidation potential from this state to this state would decide whether this atom is going to react this way or not. I mean, I didn't know much about this. Anyhow, it kind of put Laubinger's chemistry into the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
And there was quite a controversy among the inorganic chemists at Cornell. Laubinger had a couple of other people there, Papish and Brown, who were even older. And these were all very qualitative inorganic chemists. And these two young men were sort of revolutionaries. All right. Now, Henry Talby, in my thesis, if I could ever find it again, but it's too late now, might not have been found it, never haven't hindered me in any way. I acknowledge Harry Taube. I had a lot of very useful discussions with Taube when he was just arrived at Cornell, because he was an inorganic kineticist. Longer, he wouldn't have known what kinetics is all about, probably. All right. And I got Henry Taube to organize a kinetics seminar, which is something that organic, inorganic, everybody could take advantage of. The new methods of kinetics, new meaning 44, kinetics for everybody, and many of the graduate students participated. And it was really a seminar in that Henry gave the first one, Toro Bean gave the second one, and then it was the graduate students who gave seminars, and people like Taube and Rubin were there to criticize, and you could learn a lot. That was very good. Even after I got out of school, I went back for a visit one time and I gave a seminar. So we benefited a lot from these two guys. There was a young man in organic chemistry. His last name was Russell. And the last I heard about him is he was put in jail in Colorado for stealing some of the chemistry department hardware, hammers and stuff like that. So that was after he left Cornell and went to Colorado. So he didn't get a Nobel Prize. But he had the organic, he was about the only organic. Bruce may have been there. I think it was William Bruce. He was the third. There were three organic professors. Johnson was the senior man. Miller and Bruce. And Bruce may still have been. And I think Bruce stayed at Cornell, yes. And then this guy Russell, they hired him from somewhere. And then after the war, and he got a permanent job at Colorado. He was caught with his finger in the till. All right. Blomqvist. Now, Blomqvist is a special case. Blomqvist was a student of organic chemistry in 1940. It was all derived from a group in Champaign, University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. Roger Adams, Carl Marvel, Schreiner until he moved to Iowa, all that bunch. Snyder, Fuson, great names, all great names of organic chemistry. Johnson was one of Adams' students. My own former boss, Wallace Broad, also was a student of Adams, but he got into instrumentation. And these guys at Illinois, they were all very much, well, there was a compendium about six volumes taking up this much in a bookshelf. It was organic chemistry, and this was written by one, each volume was written by one of these guys I just mentioned to you. And that was real synthetic organic chemistry, and that's why I say that I was never that kind of a chemist.
What was different about what they were doing compared to maybe what you were doing with Miller and what you were seeing at Cornell or other places?
Well, most people, that's wrong. These guys would start with something, would end with something, they would establish that end product for sure, and they'd be happy. Bill Miller, Michael Dewar especially, others who were more interested in mechanism, would say, all right, We started with this, we ended with this, how did we get there? That's the question that these guys didn't ask. They didn't care. We went from this to this. And frequently that's all you need. I mean, if you have a new way of making aspirin, well, you start with, I don't know, flood water, and you wind up with aspirin, you're very happy. You can sell the flood water a lot better price than you did before. And there was quite a controversy at the time between the mechanistic organic chemists and the purely synthetic organic chemists. And I was never happy with just starting with this, finding out what this is and quit without knowing how did we get from here to here. And this was the beginning of mechanistic organic chemistry, physical organic chemistry, call it what you wish. And Bill Miller was interested in that, but then he was taken to the war work. When he came back, he did a lot more work on this.
So this is a period of big transition between these two groups.
Yeah. Now, and I was going to tell you about Blomqvist. Blomqvist was a student either of the Illinois group or perhaps once removed, a student of J.R. Johnson at Cornell. And he was a very, very methodical synthetic chemist. Mm-hmm. He was fairly young when the war broke out. He was maybe 35. And Cornell hired him because there was a big gap. There were no organic chemists inside. And Blomqvist would, he had a photographic memory. I watched him once giving a lecture the lecture consisted of page by page by page and page of the textbook. But there's no point in paying somebody to read word for word from the textbook. His family had a very fancy menswear store in Chicago, right at the main intersection in Chicago, Michigan Avenue and the lakefront. And when he couldn't get a decent job in teaching or chemistry, he went back into the family store. And when the war broke out, Cornell dug him out of the family haberdashery store and gave him a professorship. And he stayed on for a while. I don't know how long. I think he may have stayed on till he retired. So, but there was a very clear-cut difference between Blomqvist kind of organic chemistry and Bill Miller's kind of organic. You see, Bill Miller was a fluorine chemist, and fluorine in an organic molecule has electrostatic effects, or other electronic effects. So if you choose one or two things, you're going to pay attention to these effects and you understand the chemistry a lot more. Or else you just say you go from here to here and that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. And I like the other kind. I mean, I like the mechanistic kind. All right.
So you were accidentally at the vanguard of this working with Miller. So you were accidentally at the vanguard of this new mechanistic approach to organic synthesis. Would that be right?
Miller had a very large research group when they all packed up and went to New York. He had about 10 people. I mean, that was very large those days. And I was the one left behind. But New York to Ithaca at that time was 8 hours on the train. Mm. No other way. Or 6 hours by car.
Yeah.
And every now and then Bill Miller would come to Ithaca. He came to give me my exams. I would sometimes visit him in New York. I had friends in New York, whatnot. But so we're not completely out of touch. But I had much less direction in my master's and doctorate than most people do in there. Although, I don't know, Debye didn't pay any attention to his students. So I was dating a girl, and she signed up for Debye and never saw them.
So when you're finishing up your degree at Cornell...
You have to give me time.
Sure.